Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of Deliberate Practice on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me, as he does weekly, is our guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, late season, big games, playoffs on the line, all those kinds of things. And it's great to be talking ball and talking about some ideas here of things we can do at practice at this time of the year to make a difference for our team.
Yeah, it's an interesting time of the year, right? For a lot of our teams, we're either closing out our season or getting ready to play some championship football. So we probably don't want to make some drastic change to our practice. The kids are in a pattern that they're used to, but we can't get stagnant. We have to keep getting better, and we got to find ways to keep special focus areas on the things that are going to drive our victories.
And before we get into some of those ideas we have that we can, again, add some of that game day simulation, some of the game day pressure, big game type of feel to our practice or big drive type of feel to our practice, let's address something that is timely, especially in certain parts of the country that affect our teams with the weather. Certainly, you know, we don't have as many. You and I were talking about this, grass fields anymore, you know, and even, I was telling you, a memory came up on Facebook of my son Aiden. It was at the end of his sixth grade year. He's a junior now. So was that 5-6 years ago, something like that. And it was at the end of a practice, and the little guy is diving through the mud, covered in mud, diving through the mud. Of course, I had to get in my car afterwards, but you know, we just don't see that anymore, right? You don't see players covered in mud. You don't see the muddy fields anymore. Although, you know, this past week with LSU and Auburn, we saw some poor field conditions there. The field had taken on a lot of rain and, you know, was pieces of turf coming up. But by and large, because of location and because of what we've done with, you know, the turf, we don't see those muddy games anymore. It's less of a factor in football.
No, completely. The footing in the wet grass is probably, in my estimation, really pretty different than the footing on the new turf fields, even when they're wet. You know, I remember growing up, and I'm sure we all do, you know, the conversations about the receiver having the advantage, they know where they're going and slipping and guys getting out. And it might not be as big of an issue as it was in the past, but there is still some conversation there. Obviously, the wet, you know, a lot of college games had some good water. But for those of us up in the north, this is going across the entire northern band of the country, the cold can become an issue this time of year, especially going into playoff runs. I remember talking to some coaches from, you know, up in the mountain regions of Colorado, and they're kind of saying, like, yeah, you know, everyone wants to throw the ball and score points, but our championship played outside, and this was talking about, again, the state of Colorado. So, like, if you can't run the ball, you know, even if it's out of your spread formations and whatever you want to do, it's going to be really tough to win a championship. But so that brings a couple points. Is that one, you know, are our teams adaptable? Are we prepared for that? But also, are the players prepared for whether it's rain, whether it's cold? And what are some simple things coaches can do to address going into those situations?
Yeah, and there's the obvious stuff, like just, you know, reading this past weekend as the Patriots were about to play the Browns, they were preparing for the rain they were going to see. They knew the forecast. They were soaking the footballs. I know you wrote a nice blog article about that. We'll link that in the show notes. So those are some obvious things you can do. I mean, if you are playing on grass or potentially in mud, it's about finding some areas of the field where maybe you can get that kind of simulation and get players to understand the type of footwork they might need or any kind of adjustments they might need. But again, for most of us, we don't worry about that. I think my son's team this season did not play on grass. Not one time. There's only one team in the conference with grass, and we play them at home this week. So, you know, that's that the field turf certainly has been, you know, an equalizer in that, that there's not the team with the advantage if everybody's playing on turf, right? You know, I mean, it could be the advantage of understanding certain parts of the field and where it might get slick. And, you know, I can remember game plans being built around, you know, knowing what our home field was like, and that, you know, there were certain parts of the field where we didn't want to call a play in the middle of the field at that time. We wanted to get the ball outside the hashes where there was a little bit better footing for our receivers or our running backs or our quarterbacks, whatever it might be. And, you know, that, I guess that part of the game has disappeared for a lot of coaches. They don't have to think about those kinds of things. But, you know, we do have to think about how our players adapt to the game. And you brought up cold weather. And I would say, I read this a long time ago, that, you know, especially when it gets cold, because players are out there moving around, it's going to feel about 30 degrees warmer for them than what the temperature really is. So if you're playing in a 40 degree day, you know, if they're out there moving around quite a bit, you know, their bodies are feeling more like 70 degrees rather than, you know, that brutally cold day. So you don't necessarily need them all bundled up because they're out there and playing. But it's one of those things that if your players are going to wear different gear than they normally do, the time to figure that out probably is not on game day.
100%. I mean, I always remember our first or second cold weather game of the year when I was at Penn State, and obviously the big university, you had access to, you know, all the gear. It wasn't as big of a deal in high school, but, you know, guys were changing after pregame warm-up because they realized they were too hot. And I think it's spot on that, you know, if you have some cold days in your forecast and you're going into those state playoffs and it's going to be chilly, you know, you want your guys to start to play with what they're actually going to be comfortable in. You know, I think a lot of those underlayer base companies now, you know, like, have multi levels of thickness. They have, you know, cold gear and hot gear, and, like, you know, then you can go find like some mountain climbing, hunting, super level warm stuff. Well, what do they actually need? What are they going to wear? And, you know, not to get over crazy, but there's probably good conversations for coaches too. If you're a guy or that plays on the team and you're a special teamer, so, you know, with the average drive, you know, maybe you're only on the field for one play every 6 or 8 minutes of real world time, 3 minute clock drive or something. Well, you may need to do a little bit better to stay warm. If you're a never come off the field guy on a, you know, a small school team, you're going to probably have to dress completely differently. You know, and I remember guys too, you know, you start seeing guys in the locker room with the hand warmers and the hot hands and all the things, you know, that they would get on the cold weather. All of a sudden you think, have you ever worn that before? You're stuffing foot warmers in your shoe. Have you ever ran around and tried to run a route with those before? Like, what if you get some big nasty blister by the end of the first quarter? What are you doing for gloves? You know, guys, the hooded sweatshirt stuff became popular a couple years ago, I think, until the NFL banned it, versus some of that thermal gear. So what are you going to wear? Our rule was always, you can't wear anything on game day you haven't worn to practice, so that people were comfortable with the material, whether it was because it was slick, because it was wicking, whether it was, you know, a big old hooded sweatshirt, and maybe that retained the moisture and didn't breathe like some of these newer fabrics. I think it's worth addressing and letting the kids wear through some of that stuff so that they're comfortable on game day. You know, and the idea that, like, hey, on game day, right, you're so fired up that obviously everything is going to change. Well, your body's kind of your body. So you want your guys to make sure they're prepped for it. They've gone through the process. They've tested it. They know what they want to wear. They have a couple options, maybe a cold weather and a medium weather or whatever it is, but they're going to wear that. I wore the same thing. I had a temperature cutoff, which was, for me, was going to be 60 degrees. And anytime it was under 60 degrees, I was going to wear the same thing. And if it was over 60, I was going to wear the same thing. I kept it in big buckets and made it easy for myself. But it's probably a great time early in the week to make sure you tell your players, hey, you know, it's supposed to be this, it's supposed to be that. Let's get the base layers right, even if that means experimenting a couple of days this week.
Yeah, and I can't remember what game I was watching. I want to say maybe it was Michigan Notre Dame. I know it was a game where it was raining heavily, and the commentator was talking about, you know, potentially the players taking their gloves off. And, you know, it's funny, like back when I played, nobody had gloves. We really, I think at the time, the only glove that maybe was out there was like the Newman glove and, you know, the tackified leather. And those things, you know, were only great in certain conditions. And really nobody wore them. You didn't see it out there. But now I think about it, you know, I'm not sure I've ever seen my son play football without gloves on or his teammates. It seems like the only player out on the field without gloves now is the quarterback. And sometimes that guy has gloves on as well.
No, 100%. If you don't know how those gloves are going to react to the weather changes, it can be interesting and a little adaptation. You know, I think all of us would say we agree that that cold ball too on that real balmy day, it does feel a little bit slicker. So, you know, like have we practiced with those things before? I've seen teams, you know, not just do the old wet ball drills, but they'd actually have their guys, you know, put their hands in the bucket of ice water or hold an ice bag from the trainer in between drill reps to mimic getting their hands a little chilly, because you know how that can affect your fine motor patterns. So there's creative ways to work around that. Again, if you're playing in the mud and your hands and or gloves are going to get covered in mud, it's much different than playing on turf where you're dealing with the wet. But either way, I think you want to have some preparation for that, or at least some prior knowledge of how our equipment, our gear, our kit, whatever you want to call it, is going to react. And so the players are comfortable making that adjustment. And it's not like you said, the first time I've ever played without gloves is in a state playoff game because the weather demanded it. So I think most of us would agree that's not a situation we want our guys in.
Yeah, and it's as simple as, you know, setting aside, you know, just a 5-minute period and saying, all right, maybe you're coming out of a water break, no gloves, next 5 minutes, and, you know, have them take them off just to get used to it in case that's something that becomes necessary in that particular game. And again, it's about understanding what are the conditions that you may play in, what's the weather forecast look like, and, you know, making those adjustments, having at least have them think about it, have it in their mental preparation so that, you know, it's not all of a sudden on game day they're hit with, you know, wow, I didn't think about this all week long, or I didn't prepare for this. So some of it is just the mentality. And that kind of leads to our next topic here, which is, you know, thinking about how we can adapt our practice to create that critical game situation. You and I have talked about several ideas with this before, but the idea here is, because we don't do this, you know, all the time, is maybe putting, you know, in certain areas of your script and understanding for the players and letting them know, hey, this is the score. This is the point differential in the game. We're up 2 scores. We're down 2 scores. You know, what needs to change mentally and operationally within that kind of a setting, within that kind of situation for your players? Maybe it's, guys, you know, we're starting here on the minus 35. We've got 65 yards to go. We need at least 3 points out of this one on this particular drive. And you don't have to go to a live period to do that. You can still maintain your thud or your tag off or whatever it might be. The coach controls the situation. So, I mean, you may have a pass that, you know, went all the way down the field for the score, but maybe you're going to put the ball, you know, 20 yards out and make them go from there and enforce a situation where you have that field goal and they have to convert. But again, it's creating those things. Again, as you know, you think about the playoffs, the competition obviously gets tighter between those teams. They're there for a reason, and they're going to be tough games. They're going to be games that do, you know, a lot of times come down to crunch time and being able to make a play under a certain situation to be able to win the football game or to be able to preserve the win.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because as we get deeper into the season, we've talked before about the natural tendency to try to reduce some of the physical load. So say we're going, you know, at one of our more controlled tempos, we're trying to watch the total yardage and sprints, or we're trying to reduce the load. So this is where coaches can get really creative. How do we artificially create some pressure and some stress? So obviously, to your point, you want to want to lay out a good situation, you know, but laying out that good situation and then having the players think through it and get some reps versus scout team, obviously a key part of our learning process. But how do we start going good on good? And in practice, especially at, you know, week 10, week 12 of the season, you know, if we were to not do well as a unit in one of those competitive situations, you know, our senior leadership, our team leaders are probably going to talk to us about how, hey, we need to pick it up. We need to be better. We need to have sharp practices. It's an important week. It's win or go home and all those kind of things. But that's after the fact. So how do we crank up the pressure during the situation? How do we really get the juice going and try to maybe work some of those mental stresses? So obviously we want to do that with speed. Speed is the ultimate. So can we reduce the collision load but keep the speed high? If we're not doing a 2-minute situation like you suggested, you know, let's let our rest and the time between plays operate. Let's make sure we're cranking at full speed. But there's also simple little things, and most of our players are very competitive. So one of the things that our coaches would always do, and I still recommend this, is we would just figure out little bets. We would always have bets, and they'd be offense versus defense in whatever the situation we were going to be in. And those punishments, you know, for your little competition bets, you know, early in the season, you see like push-ups and squat jumps, or, you know, this team's not going to have to run. Well, if you're trying to reduce the physical load and keep the guys fresh, a physical bet maybe isn't the best. But what can you do, you know, to make some sort of pressure on it, to get the offensive and defensive guys and your competitive leaders kind of taking the charge and leading up on that? So we would do silly things like, you know, the loser has to sing a song. The loser, you know, at the end of practice would have to sing, you know, NSYNC or Britney Spears, Showing My Age, because those were the songs that people were, you know, kind of half popular and half made fun of at the time. That the winning team, you know, would get to do something first. The losing team was the one that had to stay and clean up the cones and water bottles and equipment. The losing team would have to carry the winning team's helmets and shoulder pads back to the locker room. And what you're kind of counting on is the players' positive. Obviously, we got to keep in perspective, but that little ribbing that they're going to give each other, motivating them. And as you get that challenge level to go a little bit, you can start to create a little bit of stress, a little bit of pressure, a little bit of action between those guys, which is ultimately what those big games come down to. Championship football, for me, is often who handles the stress in the situation best. And we can put our players well further into doing that if we can inoculate them to that by having challenging situations and some stresses beforehand.
I think, too, when you look at creating, you know, taking, you know, whatever it might be, 5 minutes of your script and saying, hey, this is going to be the situation here and we're going to play this out. Make sure that the special teams get into that part as well. I think, you know, when we get to this part of the year, our guys know our schemes on special teams. You know, what we installed a lot of times, especially high school, even at the small college level. I mean, you know, I was in charge of kick return. We had return right, return left, and then a cutback play off of each side. That was it. That's all we did. And then our hands team, of course. And, you know, you could fall into that trap of guys, they do it all the time, right? They're guilty of it, no matter what the focus is, of getting a little bit lackadaisical mentally. Does that show up on game day? I mean, you know, you look at some of the plays from this past week in college football. What were these guys thinking? You know, how did that happen? Is it something in practice that as the season goes on, that there's the mental focus in practice isn't there, and then we don't necessarily get what we want on game day? So I think when you create those situations, whether it's, hey, we got to finish with a kick, or the extra point is what we need for the win, or, you know, hey, we got to get field position with this punt, you know, putting it in within that period as well. So it's stressing the importance of that in the game, keeping that focus on, guys, we're not just running reps here. This is important to what we're doing. I mean, they're kids, right? Human nature, that they're, if they've fallen into a routine, there may be some things that slip. So look at ways that you can mix it up. Still be efficient with your practice. You don't certainly want things to be disruptive. You want to keep in the flow. But, you know, make it on some of these days, make it in the flow of the game. Again, what can you do to to simulate that, to emphasize, you know, what do you believe it's going to come down to, right? I mean, is it, guys, you know, this weak field position is so important. Not that it isn't every week, but, you know, we know this is going to be a tough one, and we feel that a team that wins field position battle is going to have a big advantage. If that's so, you know, really getting the punt out there during the course of your offensive reps, or the punt return team during the course of your defensive reps, to emphasize that, I think can be a good thing. You know, punt's not a bad play. Your team maybe over the course of the regular season had it a little bit easier, didn't have to punt a whole lot, and now all of a sudden they're punting a lot. I mean, to me, the punt is the biggest offensive play in football. It's the one that changes field position the most. So just getting that into your mentality and keeping things on edge a little bit by creating these situations, I think can help to keep the focus of your team as you get into the late season. And even, you know, I mean, your goals might have disappeared. You might not have the playoffs on the horizon. You might not have a championship on the horizon. But what you do have is your program. And continuing to move it forward. So you want to end on a positive note. You don't want your players to mail it in here the last week or two of the season.
Coach Keith, I could not agree more. And for those that are out of it, you know, it's, I think the age old, you know, you owe it to your upperclassmen, you know, to go out and send them off on a positive note. You know, if you are 0-8 and you leave 1-9, you know, that's a memorable moment that everyone can walk away with for a smile. So you want to make sure that you keep it sharp. And I'm a huge believer in a term that I learned, which was called playing in the right places. And you start thinking about, you know, like, we want to play as much football, and it's really offensively or defensively, like, on their half of the field, right? And if we can play as much football as we can between the 20 and 35 yard line on their half of the field, man, we're in a pretty good place, because by the time we get the ball back and all that stuff, we're in positions to score. So I love the idea of, even during your team offense, whether it's a competitive period or not, you know, when that ball is moving and you get into the 40, is throw the punt team out there and give them targets, you know, give them situations. Hey, we got to get inside the 20. Hey, we got to get inside the 10, so that they're practicing. Hey, if the drive ends with this situation, but the drive ends with us putting a punt inside the 10-yard line, we're in position to play football where we want to play football. And then when we get the ball back, one first down, and we're playing football back where we want to play football. And that can be absolutely huge. So working in that punt into that team offense, I think, is incredibly important. And in the same situation, you know, working some goals from the punt return team into the defensive situation, that after we get that stop, hey, we got the ball outside the 25 or outside the 30, whatever your team goals are for starting position, is make sure you're tagging those things together, so it starts to feel like complementary football. And complementary football, I think sometimes it's got a bad rap, and maybe in recent years with our high scoring offense, about maybe a slow or a trudging game. But complementary football to me just means we're going to play where we want to play. So our punt's going to be great. Our return's going to be great. We're going to put ourselves in position to play high quality football. And I think linking that together, and as always, talking through that, gives us the opportunity to drill down in that, to make it important. You still obviously want to do your special teams, you know, in the periods where you're working on the skills of special teams. But the more we can integrate, the more we can play to the game and the way it's actually going to work, I think the better off we are. It reinforces the importance, and it also reinforces that dependent nature of what we're trying to do together.
Yeah, Andy, I love that idea. Complementary football and really making sure all phases of the game work together. So, you know, those of you who are finishing up the season, best of luck for a positive end to it. And those of you continuing on, best of luck in winning a championship or moving on in the playoffs. I can't say, as we have wound down the regular season here, and we're going to continue with deliberate practice as we go through the playoffs, but we'll be addressing, you know, both the teams that are still playing, as well as some ideas to start to prepare you for what you can do within your off season to work on some skill development things. And a lot of this we'll be talking a lot about what we've put together in our systems, which you can find on footballdevelopment.com, our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling, and really all designed to be able to work these, at least parts of them, year round. So you continue to develop the skills of your player in an efficient way and in a way that, you know, meets the rules and regulations of your state in the off season. So, Andy, as always, appreciate the ideas here for a better practice, for a deliberate practice. And I look forward to continuing this through the postseason for teams that are playing. And like I said, the teams who are in the clubhouse will be talking to you as well.
Yeah, Coach, again, thanks for having me. For the listeners, again, good luck for everyone that's playing, for those whose seasons are going to end. Can't emphasize enough, we keep hope you tuning in. Obviously, we have the technical skills aspect, but we hope to cover some great stuff on becoming a better individual coach. And Keith has some great tactical stuff on addressing your performance and what were your best plays and how to drill down to become a better play caller. For those that are continuing the playoffs, we'll hopefully continue to layer ideas to make practice as game situation specific as possible and prepare your guys for those crucial moments. So to everyone, as always, good luck this week, and we'll talk again next.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.